Welcome back to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. I am so excited about the show that we have ahead of us. We have some phenomenal information that could save lives. I am Dr. Michael Karlfeldt, and with me I have my co-host,
Tanya Hobo.
You're going to need to tune in to what's going on today. The information is jam-packed, so don't step away.
So excited. Let's go ahead and get this started. Well, welcome, Stephanie, to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. I'm so excited to have you with us all the way from Scotland.
I love it. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I think that what you are doing with the podcast is really important, because when I was really unwell, I would look for people's success stories and read them and use that as a way to kind of keep myself motivated to keep going when I felt like I couldn't go with the treatment. When I could see that people could get better, I would look at their stories and think, I'll be doing that one day and be telling people how I got better. So I do think it's a really good podcast that you are both doing that will be helping a lot of people.
Wonderful. And isn't it cool that you're at that place now where you can tell the story? Yes. You are that one.
Now you're giving back to all those story listeners that helped you get through it. And that's exactly why we do it, to spread the awareness and to give that hope to those that are, feel like they're on their deathbed, so to say. So we're excited to hear your journey.
So tell me a little bit. Edinburgh, it's the middle of the night now, right? Isn't it? What time?
It is exactly midnight just now, yeah.
Okay. Well, I applaud you for that, and to be able to be coherent at this time of the day. So just that alone shows that you come far in your journey?
Oh, definitely. Yes, it really does. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit where it all started. I mean, with your symptoms and where it all started.
Okay. So for me, I grew up in Scotland, which is obviously a lovely country. There's a lot of countryside. I grew up fishing, playing in long grass, rolling around, always with animals as well. My friends had stables where she had horses, pigs, any animal, you name it. I've had one as a pet or been around it at some point in time. My mum would also say that I used to play with like the little worms that you would hook on the line for fishing and things like that. So I've always been really connected to like animals, nature. I've had countless bug bites, too many to count. As you know, in Scotland, we have the midges here. Have you heard of that?
No.
They're just little flies, kind of, that they come around in swarms, and they're kind of known for biting you, basically. And you get these really annoying bug bites, basically. So it was not abnormal for me to have a bite, have marks on me or anything like that. But unfortunately, when I was growing up, I myself or my family knew nothing about Lyme disease. It was not really spoken about. We didn't know anyone at that time who had it. So nothing. If I seen a bite and had a rash on me, I would never have thought to anything about it, anything more. So my first symptom was around 7 years old. I had very severe migraines to the point where it was debilitating. So for a seven-year-old, that's very abnormal. I would be screaming, crying. I would have to go under the covers in bed and block out every piece of light. And this could go on for days sometimes. And my mum could not work out what was going on with me at all. So like any mum would, she took me to the doctor and they could not figure out either. They did brain scans, different tests, And this was the start of my journey of not being believed by the doctors, your parents, as I know that many of the Lyme patients experience the same issues, especially being a child. She's been a wee bit dramatic. It's probably just a headache, all of that kind of thing.
Right.
So right away from being very young, that mentality is being drilled into me right away. You know, dramatic, drama queen. It's probably not that bad. And when I think back, those migraines just naturally came to an end after about a year and a half. There was no treatment done. I've even looked back in my medical records and nothing was done. It just kind of went away. It was kind of ignored. So then it went on as I would get older. We talk about the common Lyme symptoms, which is things coming on in waves. And that was very much how it was for me. I could function to a normal level, but there was always something wrong. Like it would be the pain, or it would be a migraine, or it would be very bad anxiety I had when I was about 8 years old. Crying, panic attacks, again, something that for an 8-year-old, 9-year-old is not normal. But my mum only went to the doctor and unfortunately only listened to what the doctor would say. So if he said there's nothing wrong with her, she would say, okay, well, just calm down. You're being dramatic again. And that cycle continued. And then when I was about 10 years old, this is when the pain in my body really started to set in. And it was really, really difficult to go to school, write even, because the pains were in my wrists here and my hands. And my doctor would say, it's because you go to cheerleading, that's what's causing this problem.
Oh, so you had all these pains just because of cheerleading?
I would
assume other children did cheerleading and they did not have that pain, right?
Right. Pain doesn't come along with everybody's cheerleading.
Yeah. But again, at that time, the doctor would kind of look at me and roll the eyes and say, oh, like, no, you can't be in that much pain, or you're saying that you just woke up and you were just in pain. No, you must have leaned on it some way or fell over and hurt it. And I would say, no, it's pain, but it was pain in my hand, and then it was pain in my leg, and then it was all these different pains. And this was when it was very difficult to communicate, because I was still a child. So when the doctor is telling you, unfortunately, we grew up where you trust whatever your doctor is saying. So again, as a child, it's this whole thing that's drilled in to say, you're not experiencing what you are experiencing. You're making it up. And that is one of the hardest things about this whole disease, is not being heard for what is actually wrong with you. And that's why I feel so compelled to tell my story in detail, so that if anyone maybe has went through the same pattern or situation with their doctor, to know that it's not okay and that you have to advocate for yourself, which isn't right either. You should be able to go to your doctor and they should be able to be helping you, but unfortunately with this disease, it is definitely not it is not like that. So that being drilled into me as a child just made me quieten and retract into myself and actually not speak up when I was in pain or when something was wrong, because I had so much stress around speaking up, needing to go to the doctor, And then that whole process, it was just a cycle that was just constant. And that is a cycle that needs to be broken.
Yeah,
it needs to be.
Yeah, you weren't being heard anyway. I mean, nobody was listening to. So in addition to being in pain and suffering from all of that, you're then trained that your voice doesn't matter. You know, that what you're feeling does not matter. And that in itself also will have a certain trauma that are stored in the body, which actually makes the pain worse.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So yeah, and so I'm curious in Scotland. I'm familiar with kind of here in the United States how unknowledgeable the medical profession is in regards to Lyme. How common is it in Scotland? What is the awareness level in Scotland in regards to Lyme?
I would say that over the past few years, I have seen a massive increase in the awareness, but it's still not enough. And what I mean by that is you're seeing little snippets on the news of, be aware, this young lady was cut down in her prime because of a tick bite. But then when you maybe click on the article, it will just give you maybe misinformation, such as you will only have the Lyme if you see the bullseye rash, which we know by now is not everyone gets. So it can be a little bit frustrating to think, oh yes, we're finally getting somewhere with it, and then you really dig into it and what they're actually saying is not the full story, because it is a complicated story to tell. It's not easy to explain from start to finish. So the awareness is slowly coming, but it's not enough here with the doctors and things like that. When I had my Lyme test done, the doctors here, I felt like my doctor, my GP, it was like he wanted to help me but couldn't, because he was saying I have to stick within my guidelines and my things that I'm allowed to do within the NHS.
When did you finally, you started at 10 years old with all these pains and all of that. And after a while you stopped communicating about it, stopped going to the doctors. When did you kind of go to a doctor that, to recognize or didn't even start to look in that direction? Or when did you have a clue?
So I am now 25 years old, and I only found out I had Lyme 3 years ago. So I went through a long time. Like, I have a list of symptoms here that are never ending. I remember once that I went to the doctor with a huge list, because one of my symptoms that is also obviously common is memory loss. So each time I would go to the doctor, I would maybe fumble my words, forget things I wanted to say. So this time I was really determined, and I was saying, I'm going to say every point. And I went in with a full list, and it was almost like a little laugh. They did. There is no way all this is from one thing. And I said, yes, but I don't experience these all day, every day. But these are what come and go in waves very randomly. And it was like, well, no, it must be this for this. Your nausea must be this. Your memory must be because of something else. And I just felt like I knew that there was something causing probably everything. But it was a very long time for me before I managed to get a doctor to actually believe in what I was saying and really take the whole body into consideration, because now I'm actually studying to be a herbalist.
Oh, cool.
Love that.
Yeah, which I love, because you take the person as a whole. You don't take just one symptom, two symptoms. It's the whole picture. And I just think if someone had did that for me earlier, I would have saved a lot of years of illness and pain as well.
Absolutely.
So when you, when you were 10, you went to doctors and then nobody listened to you. When did you stop going to doctors and when did you finally take the courage to go to doctors again?
So when I was a teenager, maybe about 14, 15, I had to start going to the doctor again because I had a lot of problems with my menstrual cycle. Very painful, very heavy. I had to get a laparoscopy of keyhole surgery and they did not find anything. And then at that time, I had really severe psychological symptoms, really severe anxiety, depression, panic attacks. I also had this really strange symptom that I don't really see a lot of people talk about, which I'm thinking I'm pronouncing this correctly. It's the pseudoblar effect, where you laugh and cry, then laugh and cry, but you're not crying with laughter. It's you're very severely upset and then you're very happy and it's changing very rapidly from one to the other. And when this would happen, my body would tense so hard that I would actually be in pain from the how tense my whole body would get. It would almost be like some sort of fit where this crazy thing was going on in my mind. I'm laughing, crying. And I remember the first time it happened and my husband thought I was joking because it was so strange and out of the blue. And it was very, very distressing. So I started to go to the doctor again to say, you know, something's not right here. Like, that is not normal. And I had never heard of that before at that time.
I have never heard of that before either, but that would be very frustrating and very scary to not really have control of your own emotions. Going from being happy and then a true sad crying, like you must have thought you were going crazy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what I can think of is that you holding your emotions in and not being heard. I mean, that's gonna you're holding all that energy in, and there has to be a way for that energy to be dispersed at some moment. So the only way then is to kind of let it out in those kind of strong pulses, you know, where you have those emotions like laughing and crying and trying to get those emotions out that you haven't, you know, nobody's been listening to it. And, you know, so that's what I
makes sense.
That's what I would think.
Yeah, it was very distressing and very, very strange, not a nice thing to experience. But overall, I had chronic urine infections. I always felt sick. I had very severe memory problems. I had always had low iron. So they blamed a lot of my fatigue and things like that, saying, well, your iron's low. And I would think, okay, well, I would take the iron tablets, nothing would get better. I would have very extreme weakness as well. So this was particularly bad in 2019, where I couldn't hold pots and pans and I would get very frustrated. And I'm talking empty pots and pans to pick up, to make dinner, to do this, to do that. I couldn't hold anything, and that was just how weak my hands were at that time. I struggled to brush my teeth, and I was very distressed because I used to be a makeup artist, so holding brushes and things, if my hands didn't work, then I wasn't working at all. And with that came a lot of numbness in my back, so it was like the bottom area of my back going down my hips was very numb. So then it became very difficult to move around and walk. And at that time, I was only 23 years old. And the doctors would say, take a painkiller. Hospital. They wanted me to see a rheumatologist, and it was very, very distressing at that point. I was upset every day. I was online trying to put in all this big list of symptoms that I'd had to try and see what would come up. And I spoke to different doctors. I never just stuck with the one doctor. I always tried to move around to see different doctors. At one point, I had a really enlarged lymph node on my neck. So I had a big lump sticking out. And I went to the hospital, and they did an ultrasound on my neck and said that everything looked fine. Your lymph node is just enlarged because your body must be fighting an infection. And everything's fine. As long as it doesn't get bigger, then you can just leave it. And now when I think back to that, I think, why did they just say that as if it was nothing? Clearly something was going on there. I had this big lump on my neck, and they just said, oh, well, as long as it doesn't get any bigger, it's fine. So there was these really telltale things that something was wrong when I look back. But yet they never tried to look at my full history and think, well, is there something more going on here? Which is crazy to me when I think about it. But anyway, it wasn't until I met my husband when I was around 18 years old that he said to me one day, you're always in pain. There's always something, not in a negative way, but he was always saying, there's always something wrong with you. And I said, yes, but I've always been like that. And he said, but because you've always been like that doesn't mean that that is normal and that is okay. And that was a big turning point for me, because it sounds so silly to say this, but I thought everyone lived like that. I thought everyone felt pain in their body. And he said, no, that's not the case. And I was like, oh, really? You don't feel pain in your joints all the time? You don't feel... And he was like, no. And that was a really big turning point for me. So, sorry, my cats are running around.
Wants to be on the camera too and want to talk about it as well.
That is crazy to... And I mean, I can totally relate to that, how if... From starting at 7, you always had something wrong with you. Why would you not think everybody lives like that? You don't know. It's not like you have a conversation with people that say, hey, do you have pain here? Or, you know, how do you feel? Do you have headaches all the time? That's not a conversation that you just have with somebody. So there would be no way for you to know. So I bet that was really eye-opening. Like, okay, you're not a doctor, but you're telling me something I didn't know. So... Wow. Good for him for saying that and standing up for you and being your voice when nobody would listen to you.
Yeah, well, that was really when things started to change for me, because like I said before, at that time I'd kind of given up with going to the doctor, and he would say, well, you need to go to the doctor for this pain, you need to go to the doctor for this, and I'd say no, because I would then come away from the doctor feeling worse than when I went in. So to me, it was like, no, it is not worth it at all. But he really pushed me to continue to figure out what was wrong. And he never doubted how I was feeling. And I think he also could see that I was hiding a lot of it and not actually seeing how much pain and things were going on under the surface. So then at 19, so this was about a year after I met my husband, I was admitted to hospital because I could not breathe. It was very severe. Every time I tried to lift my chest up for a breath, it was pain. So I went to the hospital. They did x-rays, they even did ECGs, and nothing came back. So of course they tell me, we think you're just stressed. We think you just need to manage your anxiety a wee bit better. Now, I had experienced anxiety before. I've had panic attacks before. There's a very distinct, and I'm very aware that anxiety can cause a lot of physical symptoms, which it definitely can. However, you know your own body, and you know when you are experiencing something that's not right, and you know when you're experiencing something that could be such as anxiety and not. So at this time, it was very terrifying for me, to be honest, because again, I was very young, 19. All my friends would be going out at the weekends, going here, doing this, doing that. But for me, I was at home in bed wondering, why am I struggling to breathe? Why am I in all this pain? So that would happen 3 or 4 times, all the same story going in. And once I did get a doctor who actually said, I think you would consider if you have MS or something along those lines. And I felt so relieved because I thought, thank goodness, here is someone actually having a conversation where they are saying, you may have this, you may have that, rather than completely dismissing me. So at that point, I could have been told anything and I would have been happy. I just wanted to know what was going on. So of course, knowing what I know now, I would know that to probably be ear hunger attack, because then as I went on to experience that through my treatment, that's what I kind of linked that to. But when that is not, when you don't know about that, it's very distressing. So yes, around that time, the doctor tried to ask me about MS, lupus, fibromyalgia, but no, nothing was really pushed for me at that time. So I kind of just left it again, because again, things came in waves. So those kind of attacks stopped. And then fast forward to 2019 was when everything was very, very intense for me. This was when I was numb in my back. I couldn't hold anything. I also had a lot of trouble going into public spaces. So for me, this was going to a supermarket for 10 minutes, coming home, I'm lying down in bed, and for me it was almost overstimulation of my nervous system was just completely shot by this point. So we were engaged to be married, and we planned our wedding in Santorini in Greece.
Oh, so that's beautiful there.
This was obviously an absolute dream. But I always had this undercurrent of absolute stress. Am I going to be unwell? Am I not going to be? So that was the end of 2019. We were due to be married in 2020. And then, of course, lockdown hit us in March. And you can imagine that here you could not even get on the phone with a doctor. So here I am, I'm at home, I'm numb, struggling to walk, struggling to hold anything, struggling to even get out and about, which at that time wasn't an issue because we were in lockdown, but I couldn't even if I had wanted to. Your one walk a day, that was a very big moment for me in my day during lockdown. And here I am, months away from my dream wedding, and I'm feeling like this, and the doctor's just telling me, take a paracetamol, take an ibuprofen. It was one of the worst things that I've ever went through. like I said before, throughout my life up to that point, I could manage, I could work. It would come and go in waves more. So it was certain times I maybe couldn't go out, but I could maybe push through and then know if I had a day off, I could recover. But this now became nonstop. Whether it was the stress of the lockdowns or whatever, I don't know that what the exact cause would be, but it was hell at this point. I was crying every day and I was on the internet every day and nothing was coming up that could explain what was wrong with me. And the doctor had no interest. The doctor actually said to me one day, I think I had another little attack of ear hunger, and he said, well, you've had this before and you were fine, so I think you'll be fine again this time.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You clearly know when you can't breathe correctly.
Yeah.
It's not something you would want to joke about, and you know that you're feeling a true air hunger.
So when did somebody finally, I mean, when did you figure out that it was Lyme? I mean, when?
So in 2020, I connected with an old friend who I used to work with. She used to be my boss and we used to work at a makeup counter together. And when I worked with her, she one day just dropped off the face of the earth and I never heard from her again. And during the lockdowns, we kind of reconnected through messaging each other. And I said to her, you know, how are you? Are you okay? And she told me that she was suffering from Lyme disease. And I said, what is that? I did not know anything about it. I had heard the words before, but I did not know anything about it. And she told me her story, and she had been to Mexico for treatment. She had been bedbound for 3 years, and she was bitten by a tick in Loch Lomond in Scotland. And from there, her life just turned upside down. So it wasn't immediately that I thought, oh my goodness, that's what's wrong with me, because her illness, to me, she was so much more severe than me. She had been bedbound for 5 years. She couldn't even lift her head off the pillow. And so I never connected that to what I thought I was going through. And then it wasn't until the end of 2020, no, excuse me, it would have been around, it's hard to remember the exacts because it's something that you want to forget, basically. Right. It must have been closer to the start of 2020. I sent away tests to Armin Labs because I had seen a lot on the internet about how the symptoms of Lyme can affect all areas of your body. And I thought, that is what is happening to me, that there is something. I've had everything at one point. I've had every symptom in some manifestation that comes and goes. So I sent them away and I only tested for Lyme at first because, of course, the tests are quite expensive. And I kind of did it on a whim, not actually thinking that that was really what was wrong with me. So the next week I got the email back and I remember that I got it just as I was going to bed for the night. And I said, oh, there's that test result back. And I opened it and it all said positive, and it was a very strong positive. And I was so happy. I was literally so happy. And I said, Chris, that's my husband. I said, I have Lyme disease. And he said, what?
It didn't matter what it was. You just wanted that acknowledgement that something was truly wrong with you. I was the same way. I was like, really? I have Lyme? Oh, I'm so excited. Just because somebody could put a name to it. And then when I found out what it was all about, I wasn't very excited, but at least I knew what I had. So yeah, that must have been exciting for you.
Yeah, you can develop a strategy at that time. I mean, you've at least, when you know, I mean, obviously with Lyme, the strategy is not easy, but at least you have something to gather your thoughts and your, you know, treatment around, you know, rather than just diffuse pain everywhere.
Right. You know what you're actually going to be battling. If you don't know what you're battling, you don't know how to handle it. No. You know, you don't have any type of a plan put together because you don't know what you're trying to get rid of. So, wow, that was a long time to get your diagnosis. And thank goodness for your friend who apparently that is why she disappeared off the face of the earth, because she had Lyme. Wow. Yeah.
Yes, and I don't think that if I didn't know her, I don't think I would know about this today. So this is why. So to be honest, when I started to feel better, I thought, I don't want anything to do with this ever again. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to ever talk about it, see it, anything. That's me. I'm starting to feel better. Let's put it away. But then when I really started to think about my story, if I didn't know her, would I have been better by now? So then I start to think, no, I have all this information now that I know that I could potentially help other people with their health issues. Like I said, I am a makeup artist, so I have done thousands of women's makeup at this point. And people, I work from home, so it's just me and the other person. And people open up to me a lot about very personal subjects, including their illnesses. And a lot of people are diagnosed with a lot of the things that Lyme is commonly misdiagnosed as. And of course, not everything is down to Lyme, but how many people are suffering that don't know that it could be this? One of my clients actually came to me and showed me a picture of a bullseye rash that she got and said, since then, I have had lupus. Now, yes, I'm not a doctor, but to her, I said, do you know about Lyme disease? And she said, no. And I said, well, maybe this is something to learn about and just help, because she was struggling looking after her 5-year-old daughter, and she was getting nowhere with her GP. So if maybe I think I maybe planted a little seed in her to go and learn about something, help herself, keep an eye out on her daughter for a bullseye rash in the future, then that made me very happy. So that's why I'm now passionate about actually speaking up and saying, like, no, this is very prevalent everywhere. I was just at a yoga class with an ice bath tonight, and the instructor said, do you have any health problems? And I just said, no. Awesome. So we don't have time for that. Just
yeah, the list is too long to be able to get into that. So when you finally then figured out that it was Lyme, I mean, where did you go for solutions? I mean, where did you start looking?
So right away, I was very lucky because my friend, her name is Yen, and she had so much knowledge on the subject. And very quickly, I realized that trying to treat this through the NHS is a losing battle. The tests that they have are very poor from what I have researched and learned from other people. And I feel that the people have said, even those who have had a positive result with them, their treatment is the standard 3 or 6 week doxycycline. So right away, before I had even started anything, I already knew that I needed a really good doctor. Like, that was where I needed to start. And what I had seen was a lot of people that had wasted a lot of years trying to figure it out themselves, or just went to the cheapest doctor that they could, because of course not everyone has the financials to see the best doctor or get the best treatment. So I could understand that, but for me and my husband, we spoke and we said, you know, we would rather spend the money away at a doctor and waste, potentially wasting time trying to do things ourselves or work things out ourselves or going to people who maybe aren't an expert. So I did a lot of research and I found Dr. Carsten Nicholas online, because I'd seen and heard a lot about the BCA clinic in Germany. Unfortunately, at the time I contacted him, he had just closed the BCA clinic due to COVID, because he felt like he couldn't ask people who were so ill to travel all that way during COVID. But he said that he would do physio consultation with me and that he would link me up with a doctor that in the UK that he worked with. So that was how I started. We did our first consultation and he put me on a mixture of antibiotics and herbal treatment. I did a lot of research about antibiotics and a lot of people said that they can be great, but then when you come off them, they've maybe pushed the, I don't know the ins and outs of this, so you could tell me better, but that maybe they cause things to burrow deeper.
Yeah, they kind of have them go in that hiding form, that cystic form, and kind of go deeper into the tissue. So that's, so you kind of go after the spirochetes that are floating around, but the many of those, you know, as soon as you start with the antibiotic, they go into the cystic form, and then you feel better because they are not at the spirochetes, but they're on the cystic form. And then you stop the antibiotic and now they open up again and you start become symptomatic. Yeah, but like you said, I mean, they, because they are needing to defend themselves, they need to go deeper into the tissue and can actually kind of make the problem more severe.
Yeah.
So you need to work both on like the biofilm breakers. So you need to do kind of combination strategy in order to be able to address it.
Yeah. And that's what we kind of talked through, as he was actually open to do a lot of different treatments, but I felt that I was, from our consultation things, we decided to go with antibiotics and herbals and obviously a lot of supplements and things as well. The antibiotics at first was very severe. It was hell. I couldn't believe how bad I felt. I wasn't sure if that was normal, or I had read a lot of things about Herx reactions, because I see a lot of people saying, oh, Herx is good, that means it's working. But then on the other hand, I'd researched and it said that Herxing could actually cause damage to your body. So I wanted to know what your opinion about that was.
So I think herxing is an excuse for a lot of doctors, you know, when they are either doing inappropriate treatment or they're overdoing it. And then they're just blaming it on herxing, when in reality, I mean, obviously there's going to be some symptoms at some point, but if you do it appropriately, you make sure that the pathways of elimination are open, you make sure you bind to the appropriate chemicals that are being released when you're killing things, if you make sure that the endocrine system is supported enough, as you are then going after the pathogens, then you shouldn't have to be dealing with all these horrible side effects of herxing. It should be a much better experience, and I'm not, I mean, sometimes antibiotics are needed, but I'm not the biggest fan of them. I probably more of the antiparasitical, I think, mm-hmm. are a little bit better tools in regards to that. So yeah, that's my two cents.
Yeah.
So you what were you said you had a horrible experience in the Herxing. So what did that look like for you?
So for me, it was predominantly worse when I had just taken the medicine. So I know that it can be very harsh on your digestive system and your GI tract. So then that was when we did kind of pull back. So for me, it looked like feeling very sick, lying on the couch, cuddled up, and feeling very tired. And that's when I started to do a lot of more detoxing regime. I had an infrared sauna. I did the Epsom salt baths. I did, I went on walks every day. I tried to keep my body moving because I read a book about the lymphatic system. I really started to just fully get into the detoxing, because I'll be honest, at first I didn't really feel, I thought, how is having a bath going to help me now, or how is doing this going to help me, because I thought there's no way. But then really when I started to get into that, I did start to feel like it was became a lot easier. And I will also say that at this time we were in lockdown, so I was very lucky, because it was kind of like life was saying, no, like you have to stop now to do this. So I was on herbals as well, and I was on a very long list of supplements, everything from vitamin B, vitamin Ds, to glutathione, to a lot of different things. And then after about 3 months, I really started to, like, my head became clear. And I remember standing at my sink in my kitchen and thinking, I'm actually happy for no reason today. And I hadn't felt that for a long time. And then after 6 months, I managed to go in the car for 1 hour, drive to a nice lock in Scotland where we rented bikes, and I cycled for 1.5 hours, and I could not believe it. It was like I had been given a new body. We would go down the hill and I would just let the brake go and just let the bike just go fast down the hill, and it was like the most unbelievable feeling I'd ever had. And that was a really big breakthrough moment for me, when I thought, well, I can get better. I can get better. Like, it's not going to be like this all the time. Because when you're sick for so long, you think, like, I never remembered feeling good. There was never a time where I felt 100% good from my childhood to this point. So to me, feeling like that wasn't an option, because I never knew. It wasn't like, for example, my friend Yen, she lived a very active, healthy life up till a very specific point, and then her life kind of collapsed. So she was trying to get back to that life, whereas for me, I never knew that
life.
Yeah, I never knew that feeling before. So that was a really big breakthrough moment for me, to go in the car even and to not feel sick and to do that and to come home. Now, don't get me wrong, I still needed to then rest for a few days after, because I knew I'm still in this treatment. It's not, oh, that's me better now. But it definitely gave me a big, big motivation and push to keep doing what I was doing and go on. So around that time, I felt like I could not take the antibiotics anymore. It was like I was putting them to my mouth and my body was saying, no, like it's too much now. And so I had another consultation, and he said, if this is how you feel, and also because of my progress, we just strictly stayed on the herbals and the supplements and all the supportive detox and other things that I was doing. And that is pretty much what I have done since. And then, so I would say it was about a full year from the day I started the protocol to me feeling like I was like, I don't like to say, we know that when you have this, you need to talk forever. For me, I need to be on my game with my health for forever now, which is fine. So that was really after the year mark was when I started to think, God, I've not had that pain for a long time. Or I would get a little pain in my knee, and then I think, oh my God, I have not felt that for a long time, a good few months now. And it was little things like that started to creep in. And then I would go out, and we'd go out shopping, and we'd go out to have something to eat. And then I'd come back and I'd think, I'm not in bed dying right now. I'm fine. And I'd be like, am I actually getting better? Is this what it's like to actually be better? Because it's not a definitive day where you wake up and you say, okay, that's me better now. It kind of just creeps up on you, and you don't expect it until you really think, wow, a year ago, if I tried to do this, I would have been out for days. And now I'm able to go and just do very simple things. Yesterday we went shopping, we went to a few different shops, we were walking around, it was hot outside, I've been on lots of walks this week, and I said to my husband, like, a year ago, no, I couldn't have did this, and I would have been in bed for days. So now I take a maintenance dose of my herbals, and I still continue with certain supplements that I still feel help me to support me, but I'm not on a massive treatment plan anymore. And like I said, I am studying herbalism, and I feel like I can take that into my own hands now. And of course, I will still always, if I have a bad day, just now I know what to do to help myself, to not let it take me 100 steps back the way. And yeah, I feel like I can just manage everything a lot better now, and I know when to push myself, when not to. But to be honest, I'm okay with that, because there was a time where brushing my teeth was the big event of my day. So
What a powerful journey. I mean, congratulations. I mean, it's been since you were 7 years old. I mean, I know you had those few years, you know, between 7 to 10 where it was a little bit less, but then, I mean, that's a long time. You know, so welcome to life.
Welcome to the real world.
Yeah.
The world where it's not normal to be in pain.
No.
And have headaches and be tired from going to the grocery store. Yeah, it's a life that you've never encountered before.
So just one question in regards to your program. How was it determined what supplements, what herbals to take? Was it just based upon symptoms? Was it based upon test? Was it based upon, what was it based upon?
So when I started working with Dr. Carson, I actually got a lot more tests done. So I then had Lyme, Bartonella, EBV, and mycoplasma. So based on those tests, that was how we decided, because like I said at the beginning, I didn't know anything. So then when we worked together, we did tests. But I should also say that I did address parasites and heavy metals as well, because I had a mouth full of mercury fillings, and I also used to live in a house that had a lot of mold, so I had it from all angles. And I think that is something to remember with Lyme, is that it's not just a Lyme most of the time, I think. I don't know, you can tell me, but I don't, from what I see people's experience, it's not, it's usually a combination of those different things. And I think that was the fact that I learned that early on in my diagnosis from a really good doctor who could explain that to me. And I didn't have to, what I see is a lot of people having to expend their own energy researching for themselves rather than finding, being able to find a doctor who can do that for them. So I was lucky that I learned a lot of this earlier on and was able to prepare to target all of these things to try and get the best result that I could.
Yeah, it's definitely not always about Lyme. It's about the co-infections, metal poisoning, parasites, candida. So many things tie into the Lyme diagnosis, and you definitely need to know what you need to attack. So,
and it was interesting. I have another radio show called Health Made Radio, and I just interviewed a gentleman in England. He does a program called the Gupta program. His name is Asha Gupta, and it's four people dealing. So like Dr. Neil Nathan. I'm not sure if you know who he is, but he wrote one of the, he's one of the mold experts, I would say, in the world, and he deals with a lot of Lyme, and so he uses this program for a lot of his Lyme patients and mold patients, because you have then a dysfunctional signaling from the brain, because it ends up being in that kind of survival signaling and survival state. So there, he uses a program that you, it's kind of a video program that you can do to retrain your amygdala and retrain your brain to then calm down the survival signaling that causes pain and that causes fatigue, that causes all these different symptoms. So that might be an interesting thing to look at as well. It's just gupta.com. There's a tremendous amount of people all over the world that have gotten benefit from that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that's really incredible story. Well, congratulations. Yeah. That is awesome.
Thank you. Yes. Congratulations. And I love that you were willing to stay up till midnight for us to do this. And for the listeners to hear your journey. These were the types of things that got you through your rough days. So I'm so glad and thankful that you're giving that back now to the community that needs you when they're going through their journey. So
yeah,
I appreciate you sharing your story with us.
Thank you for letting me tell my story. I hope that it lets people see that even if you have been sick for a long time, it doesn't mean that you can't get better. I've been on multiple holidays already. We got married. But everything is possible now. It doesn't matter how long, it just takes one doctor, one person, or be that person for yourself and advocate for yourself and do not stay quiet about it. Keep on just going with it, and something will come and you can get better. If I can do it, then anyone can do it.
I agree with that.
being sick is not normal. Don't accept being sick. It's not normal.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, and I know it's like 1 o'clock your time now, so thank you. Have a wonderful,
get a great
night's sleep. The information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or treat any disease. I hope this podcast impacted you as it did me.
Please subscribe so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. There are some excellent shows coming up that you do not want to miss. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please take a moment to write a review, and please don't keep this information to yourself. Share them with your family and friends. You never know what piece of information that will transform their lives. For past episodes and powerful information on how to conquer Lyme, go to integrativelymesolutions.com, and an additional powerful resource, limestream.com. For Lyme support and group discussions, join Tanya on Facebook at Lyme Conquerors Mentoring Lyme Warriors. If you'd like to know more about the cutting-edge integrative Lyme therapies my center offers, please visit thekarlfeldcenter.com. Thank you for spending this time with us, and I hope to see you at our next episode of Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt.